Welcome to the Oasis Podcast B-Sides. If you haven't heard the first part of our conversation, that's over on the main Oasis Podcast channel. But you've obviously heard that because, you know, loads of people listen to the Oasis Podcast and not many listen to this one, Rich.
Yet.
It's going to become the new football ramble or whatever. Joe Rogan, that's it. That's it. We'll take on Joe Rogan next.
It's funny, isn't it? We have grand ideas. I mean, what was my initial idea? Yeah, every week.
Weekly.
Yeah. I don't know what I was thinking. I mean, I think the last one we did was beginning of September, end of August.
Yeah, about 6 weeks ago, I think. Yeah,
and it's the 1st of November. But, yes. You know, we're busy. We're busy men. What can we say?
Busy boys. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you went to see Kasabian last week. So how was that?
It was great. Do you know what? It was, I think I've said this before, this kind of misleading argument that people thought that Kasabian would lose stuff without Tom, and it's not that I ever doubted it, but it's just kind of not true. In fact, if anything, they've kind of kicked on a gear because Serge as a frontman has so much more energy. Yeah. He's more of an MC than a singer at points, and he's so charismatic. He can carry the audience. He's not above, you know, make some fucking noise or, you know, everyone get down so they can jump up during fire or Bloody Pain or whatever. He's not above that. You know, and they're almost critic proof because they do stuff like that. You know, they're not afraid to sort of laugh at themselves or you know, take the mick out of themselves. They don't care about that sort of thing. So it was kind of reminded a bit of that of what a fierce and live act they are as well. I mean, they made a few changes to the group, and I think it was a stroke of genius to bring in Robert Harvey from the music to kind of fill Serge's role, so Serge can like go up top because he's got similar vocal. Well, he's got similar range to Serge. He's a good musician. He's kind of the foil now in the way Serge used to be to Tom. He now is to Serge. And yeah, I think it was a great move. And it would be very easy for the band, for Serge to go, right, well, I'm going to focus on some of the songs that I sang. So like Take Aim or Me Plus One, you know, put them in a set. But no, he's like, no, Clubfoot, Empire, Shoot the Runner, like all the ones that Tom sang, yeah, they're all going in fire, obviously. They're all going in, you know, they're not hiding from that. And it's been a very seamless transition. And yeah, they're the ultimate party bands. You know, I think we're kind of purely, as I said earlier in the other episode, you know, if you want hedonism on a Saturday night, who else are you going to go for? Kasabian, you know, it's, we've spoken about the new album, but on the live routine, I think they're near nigh on faultless.
That's a great point about the MC. He is more like, you know, like Keith and Maxim, you know, with the Prodigy. Obviously, Keith no longer with us, but yeah, that's definitely what he was doing. Obviously, I saw him in Nebworth, and it was amazing. But yeah, a bit cheesy, you know, like you said, it's sort of, but actually, who cares? If you're there to have a good time, then he's going to, you know, corral the troops in a way that's just was fantastic. But yeah. Cool. All right. What else is going on then? So I suppose because we haven't spoken for a little while, I think the biggest thing that happened in our indie world that was very interesting in the last sort of month or so was Ian Brown. So the Ian Brown kind of, and not this time, you know, banging about sort of anti-vax stuff, but actually playing music, or not really, but, you know, as as we see. But yeah, basically, he had a big tour booked. And then the first night he comes out and it's just him. There's no band. He normally has a band with him when he plays, but this time there was no band. It's just him effectively doing like karaoke. Right. And so then the first day, you know, people were walking out. They were sort of saying it was a joke. They want their money back, refunds, all that sort of stuff. But then actually, over the next couple of days, it's sort of like people kind of got behind him, and actually the general sort of discourse around it changed to be like, hey, fair play, Ian, you know, you're going off, you're doing your thing. So it was really interesting to sort of see that kind of shift, really.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I missed quite a lot of this. I think I was away, I was on holiday, but I'm really telling about it, and I've kind of watched some of the videos. I mean, he doesn't owe anyone anything. Do you know what I mean? He's like, you're paying to see Ian Brown. That's the point of it. You're not paying to see Ian Brown's band, but it would have been quite nice had he told people there wasn't going to be a band.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that would be good for him. But, you know, he's nothing if strong wills. But, you know, if Sleeping wants to do it, in fact, it's quite a big thing now. You know, bands just put on backing tracks and do their, acts to put on backing tracks to do their thing. So Sleeping Mods, Billy No Mates, quite a few others I can't think of. So it's a common thing. And, you know, times are tough, you know, to actually pay a full band and crew would probably cost quite a lot. So I can appreciate the, I can understand that. But by the same token, what was he charging? 60 quid a ticket?
Yeah.
I mean, that goes to kind of a bit of bigger picture of, you know, venues have got to compensate for cost of living. That's why gig ticket prices are going up. But obviously that goes to the consumer. That's a whole kind of different wormhole you can kind of go down. But yeah, it seemed to turn it around. And as you say, fans did seem to quite appreciate it and enjoy it. And like I say, you are there to see Ian Brown. And if the music's loud enough, then does it really matter? Mm. But yeah, a tricky one. It's only a tricky one.
I suppose the only thing is it did, when you haven't got a loud band drowning him out, it accentuates the fact he can't hold a note to save his life.
God bless him. Yeah, but that'll never change, though, will it?
No, I remember seeing him. I've seen him a few times, but there was one time I saw him supporting the Manics, I think maybe in Cardiff. And he was so bad. It's the worst I've ever heard him. It was just like unlistenable. I think I went to the bar. I was just like, I can't even cope with it. You know, it's just so bad.
So Clockworks, who it's really, I first saw them now 3 years ago before the pandemic, and it's very fulfilling to see how much they're kind of growing. And they're like a, you know, I don't want to say proper band, that sounds bad, but you know, they're a band that's gone to the next level. You know, they've got people singing their songs and they're kind of building up a live following as they go along, and really looking forward to their album, whenever it might come out. Maximo Park, who did a greatest hits set, or did a greatest hits tour. That was quite, I felt really bad for them because I saw them at the Academy in Bristol and the upstairs was shut, presumably due to a lack of ticket sales. So it was quite a small crowd, I mean, intimate crowd, one could say, but quite a small crowd for a greatest hit, what was ostensibly his greatest hits tour. And, you know, I personally think Maximo Park are one of the greatest singles band of the last few years, the last 20 years, should we say, which is a bit of a shame.
Just saying, Maxima Park. I did look at it. I was just going out. I think I was just planning to meet a mate and just go for a bite to eat. And I just thought, I'll see who's on at the Oxford, the O2 Academy Oxford. And Maxima Park were playing that night. I thought, you know what? That might be a good shout. Looked it up. I think it was like 37 quid a ticket. And I'm like, you know what? I like Maximo Park, but not 37 quid a ticket. You know what I mean? So,
That's cheap. That's cheap this day
really?
and age. Yeah, man. That's
Jesus.
really that's ab well, that's ab not I wouldn't say maybe not cheap, but that's average price for a band of their level for a Brexit store, yeah.
That to me was just like, no. I mean, yeah, if you'd, well, maybe I'm out of the loop of it a little bit, but like, yeah, 37 quid. And I know there's, I mean, going off a bit of a tangent on this, I know there has been quite a bit of chat about, what was it, Paul Heaton was saying he's limiting his ticket prices to a certain level to keep it affordable. And yeah, and I saw Roger Waters, I was chatting to a family member who was off, he was going to maybe go and see Roger Waters play. The cheapest ticket was £202.
I mean, I saw him 4 years ago, and I mean, I got a review pass, but I remember looking at the ticket prices. The cheapest one was 80 quid. And that's 4 years ago.
That's
I mean,
brutal, isn't
similar, our cheapest Arctic Monkeys tickets for their stadium tour, 80 quid. Talking about, I mean, yeah, as we know, Pulp have reformed and they've just announced a series of live shows. I'll put money on it. Those tickets will be quite expensive on Friday when they come out. I reckon upwards of 70, probably.
Jesus.
I would say, yeah, it's just, well, it's a vicious circle. I mean, because no one pays for music anymore, obviously bands have got to make their money, which was fine within reason. But then now with the cost of living, bills are going up, venues are having to pay more, like we all are. They're all to pay higher bills, and then that obviously has to go somewhere, and that goes to the consumer. Unfortunately, the consumer doesn't see that and presumes it's the band's fault. But it's not. It's the kind of it's people just need a bigger cut because the bills are kind of higher. Yeah, bands don't really have much control over their tickets anyway. You know, talking about Ian Brown, you know, I think he was probably a bit of a rip-off from what he was charging the tickets because it was just him. Then the cost of running a crew in a band being quite prohibitive. You know, it's such a vicious circle, of which I don't know there's much of a way out, to be honest.
No, it just feels a bit much, but I suppose that's where you draw the line, isn't it? It's like, well, if Maximo Park had pitched it at 20 quid, then would they have had up the upstairs open? You know what I mean? And so whereas actually, you know, you sort of you end up getting a much smaller amount of people paying higher prices versus, you know, versus trying to appeal to the masses at a lower price. But yeah, it's really difficult. I do feel for them. Yeah, I mean, sorry, I sort of went off a bit of a tangent, but you said you, yeah, Latham's supported.
Yeah, so yeah, Latham supported Kasabian. Now, I mean, I've seen them. That was the third time I've seen them in 12 months, so I'm a little bit kind of over it now already. But they played a couple of new tracks in their new album. I mean, I think they've got better live as well. I mean, the guitarist is great. Like, I think I would have said this in the last episode 2 months ago, that he's got a proper, like, kind of got Nick McCabe, John Squire stuff going on, which I love. Singer's got a great voice, and obviously they've just announced their second album, which has got the cover by our legend of the Oasis world, Brian Cannon.
Yeah, I really like the cover. I heard the new single, which I wasn't that impressed by. I just thought, okay, you know, having heard their earlier stuff, I was really excited by them, and I just don't think they've quite been, you know, been that impressive. I still sort of think, okay, every time there's a new release, but yeah, not quite where I'd hope it to be. But the cover I think is really good, and I really like the fact that, you know, that they, I don't know whether that's them or the record company or whatever has made that choice, but Brian's got such an incredible history, not just Oasis, but The Verve and Ash and Suede and all these bands, that it's like if you want to be seen as this lineage of those bands, then that's how, you know, that's how you do it. You sort of link in with Brian. Say my name. And I think I said on Twitter, I think it sort of it reminded me of like Oasis working with Peter Blake, you know, because Peter Blake then had that lineage. Well, firstly, I suppose Paul Weller working with him for Stanley Road, going back to the Beatles, he did Sergeant Pepper, and then Weller goes to see, and then so then Oasis go to him as well to do what, Stop the Clocks. And I think that's like, you know, if you want to have that linkage to the past, then that's just a really, really good way to do it.
It's interesting as well that Brian doesn't seem to do that much. Like, he did Deja Vegas album, which was in 2019, I want to say, maybe in 2018. He did the cover art for that album, but he doesn't seem to do that much. So it's interesting that, yeah, it's interesting that he's not used more, really. I mean, I could be wrong. There might be other acts, but I've not been following it in a huge detail. But yeah, you're right. If you want, you know, it's an added boost to your band's brand if you can get him in. I'm surprised he doesn't do more. But then for them, he's also in a position where he can pick and choose. But.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's obviously, he does well on his, you know, he's got the Microdot Boutique, and he's, you know, the just trading off the past and the history is doing so well for him that he doesn't necessarily need to. But no, but it is nice to then see him, because he's got such a brilliant eye. And you know, something like that, it's just, you know, the image of the kid holding the sign and stuff, it's sort of, it's just a beautiful image. Plus it also has the, you know, it goes back to the Verve holding the sign. What was it, what's the phrase?
Follow should be sudden.
Yeah, I love it. And you know, it's when you've got those links back to things like that. One of the things, I think this is an interesting discussion, sort of similar Oasis podcasty, really, but we just had the 27th anniversary of Wonderwall. And so, you know, Wonderwall comes out and you have Brian does his post, you know, and then Michael Spencer Jones, who was the photographer, does his post, and they both do their own posts. And obviously, I don't think they necessarily get on particularly well, because they don't ever credit each other. You know, it's very much, you know, they're pushing their own kind of agenda, that Michael will be saying, oh, well, I took this shot, I lined up this way, you know, and then whereas Brian's like, well, you know, obviously he came up with the whole thing. But I think that's very... And it just got me thinking the other day, it's like, there's so much to it. I think Brian shared the Wonderwall image with also like a Magritte picture that he'd kind of was his sort of, he was inspired by. And I sort of thought, yeah, I don't think Michael Spencer Jones was looking at Magritte pictures. I think, you know, I was wondering, like, what percent would you give each of them? Because obviously Brian does the research. He booked the model, who was Anita Herriot from Creation Records. He's obviously found a location, the all of that stuff he sourced and done himself. And I don't want to say that all MSJ did was point and click, because obviously there's lenses and there's everything else. But yeah, I think personally, you know, you've got to give it to the art director, right? 90-10, I'd say.
I wouldn't disagree with that, but there are precious lots of photographers I've come to appreciate in my limited dealings with the music industry and certain books, that they are, yes, they're a precious and precocious breed, through photography to be, and they have, I mean, you know, some would say justifiably, you know, is their copyright, but they are very protective of their work. So I think you'd probably get a different answer from them. But yeah, I'm kind to be, you look at the image, not the quality of the photograph. And I know there's lighting and things like that, and it's an art form in and of itself that me not being a photographer would not understand. But yeah, I'd give Brian Cannon much more credit for the Oasis stuff, for example, and the Verge stuff than Michael Spencer Jones. Absolutely, in fact, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got someone else to go in the wrong end bin, which is that guy, Rex Orange County. I think his real name's Alexander O'Connor. He's I actually didn't mind some of their stuff. It was very a bit poppy, like a bit like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Is this too poppy for me, or do I like it? But I'd heard quite a few songs of theirs on the radio and just sort of thought, every time I'd hear it, I'd go, wait, who is that? And they go, oh, okay, Rex Orange County, okay. But yeah, he's a wrong one, apparently. He was assaulted some woman, so there you go,
in the bin along with Win.
Sound effect there. All right. Cool. Well, on that positive note, I'll wish you adieu, mate. But yeah, all the best.
And you, mate, until next time.